When the election was over, I ranted and grieved, but then, in a superhuman feat of avoidance, I set it aside neatly. I put it over there, as if the consequences would wait until January 20th. Well, that came and went, and all the days since, and I can't wait this thing out. Not knowing what to do, I decided to do a little bit of everything. Reached out to representatives, donations, get out the vote letters, protest, and I try to live my best life despite what's going on in the world. I did all of these things, but I have to confess, in my brain, in my body, so many days, I've been holding my breath. Bodies love that. It gives your shoulders and your chest and your jaw that Wile E. Coyote cartoon feeling, like you're holding on so tight, you might crumble into 1,000 pieces. We forget that procrastinating doesn't just delay the chore. It can freeze parts of us, part of our dreams for our lives. Mary Oliver, unofficial UU poet laureate, wrote about this. She said, "I know you never intended to be in this world, but you're in it all the same. So why not get started immediately? I mean, belonging to it. There is so much to admire, to weep over, and to write music or poems about. You could live 100 years. It's happened, or not. I am speaking from the fortunate platform of many years, none of which I think I ever wasted. Do you need a prod? Do you need a little darkness to get you going? Let me be as urgent as a knife then and remind you of Keats, so single of purpose and thinking for a while, he had a lifetime." But John Keats died of tuberculosis when he was 25 years old in 1821 in his home next to the Spanish Steps in Rome. He'd been writing for 6 years, publishing for 4, and believed at the time of his death that he hadn't written anything worthy of being remembered, though he's considered an important poet. You will probably recognize this: "A thing of beauty is a joy forever. Its loveliness increases. It will never pass into nothingness, but still will keep a bower quiet for us, and a sleep full of sweet dreams and health and quiet breathing." Keats' tragic life resonates for me. The concern for how we're going to be remembered, the larger frustration of trying to create the grand romantic life of our dreams when something beyond our control, like illness or world events, seems to take over everything. I read a lot of poetry. Poetry is a thing of beauty and a joy forever. On days when I'm holding my breath, I can be talked into exhaling by a poem or meditation. In my meditation group, we often read from Pema Chodron's book, Comfortable with Uncertainty. About half the time I forget and call it Uncomfortable with Uncertainty, which makes more sense to me. When Mary Oliver said, "You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting," I think she was saying, "You don't have to hold your breath, unsure of what to do next." Because then she says, "You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves." So many things bring us comfort, including providing comfort to others. Knowing we are a comfort to others is a great comfort. Works both ways, like when your children check in with you, right? When you talk to your parents, when you arrive at UUCL and see someone you'd hope to talk with today is here. Debbie and Alan are here. Nicola is here. Arnie is here. could be when Judith speaks to us in that soothing voice of hers, or when Reverend Alice says, "Yaw." That word has two North Carolina syllables, and it sounds like a hug, pulling us into this beautiful community. One of my favorite gratitude quotes is from Kurt Vonnegut. He said, "I urge you to please notice when you are happy and exclaim or murmur or think at some point, if this isn't nice, I don't know what is." That makes a nice little refrain, doesn't it? Naming the love we receive, naming gratitude, helps it stick with us. All just a name, arriving at UCL and finding comfort and joy in this beautiful community, and being with our families and friends, because they are the physical home of our metaphysical hearts. If this isn't nice, I don't know what is. This isn't the first time in the past few years we've been upended. We see the news now so often, so up close, it can feel like we're in the particular war or wounded, even if we're fortunate to be privileged and far removed. The pandemic was an awful time, but it did open our collective imaginations to new ways of looking at work and made many things more accessible. If we work to make it happen, truly wonderful things might emerge now, too. Lucy Jones, in her book, Matrescence, on Pregnancy, Childbirth, and Motherhood, wrote, "Times of transformation, whatever they might be, are opportunities to find new connectedness, to choose and consolidate the things that matter, to bring repressed selves out of the shadows into the light, to forgive, to grow layers of mother of pearl, of resilience, of acceptance. When times are tough, unbelievably tough now, we can reset the bar for how we show up, for how we expect leaders to lead. We must insist on a world where love, justice, safety, and opportunity for everyone is the expectation, and no one would ever consider challenging someone's right to exist every 10 minutes. We must set that bar to non-negotiable. And remember, our kids are watching our cues for how to navigate this precipice and opportunity for themselves. We might all broaden our loving imaginations, strengthen our caretaking muscles, wear our hearts on our sleeves, be a steadfast witness. No one should ever wonder if we are their people, if we are here to help. We are here to love our neighbors. In Almost Cut My Hair, David Crosby sang, "I feel like letting my freak flag fly. I'm not giving in an inch to fear. I feel like I owe it to someone." Crosby said it was the most juvenile set of lyrics he'd ever written, but it captured how the divisiveness in 1970 American society had erupted into violence and terror, and it named the defiance felt by many who stood against that tyranny. American poet and civil rights activist Audre Lorde said, "Caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it is self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare." Lorde believed self-care should be a communal act, not just an individual one. She believed people should use their power to support their communities and challenge the systems that harm them. We can't set aside the work ahead, but we recognize rest, creativity, beauty, and community are also the work. Outsized, obvious love is how we build a better world, always elevating our understanding of love's possible shape and size, and our commitment to acting on love. Love as action, love made visible, love as an act of resistance. Ursula K. Le Guin said, "Love doesn't just sit there like a stone. It has to be made like bread, remade all the time, made new." In Practices for Solidarity and Survival, Ashley Horan says, "I will strengthen the musculature of my moral imagination. I will learn from those who dream universes and realities that feel audaciously impossible. I will ask what we would build if we had all the resources and capacity we needed, rather than what we should settle for given the current conditions. I will seek out teachers, mentors, friends, colleagues, and co-conspirators who know in their bones another world is possible. Martin Luther King said, "Peace is not merely a distant goal that we seek, but a means by which we arrive at that goal." Centering the rituals of love for ourselves and others is the means by which we arrive at that goal. The greater the challenge of our world, the greater the need for our love to lay down paths of renewal, constantly renewed, step-by-step trails, mostly walking in faith, when we can't see where to put down the next halting footstep or where our leaps of faith might land us, comfortable with uncertainty. Love doesn't just sit there like a stone. It has to be made, like halting footsteps forward, like passionate leaps of faith, remade all the time, made new. The poet Antonio Machado wrote, "Traveler, there is no path. The path is made by walking." And Mary Oliver, again, says, "I tell you this to break your heart, by which I mean only that it break open and never close again to the rest of the world." I love this language writer Brian Doyle uses to talk about transformative love. "Eventually, my son will need a new heart, a transplant when he's 30 or 40. Though Liam said airily the other day that he's decided to grow a new one from the old one, which I wouldn't bet against him doing eventually, him being a really remarkable kid. But that made me think, if we could grow new hearts out of old ones, what might we be then? What might we be if we rise and evolve? If we come further down from the brooding trees and out onto the smiling plain? If we unclench the fist and drop the dagger? If we emerge blinking from the fort and the stockade and the prison? If we smash away the steel from around our hearts? If we peel the scales from our eyes? If we do what we say we will do? If we act as if our words really matter? If our words become muscled mercy? If we grow a fifth chamber in our heart, and a seventh and a ninth, and become as if new creatures arisen from our shucked skins, the creatures we are so patently and brilliantly and utterly and wholly capable of becoming, what then?" Maria Popova, in her poem Forgiveness, says, "May the tide never tire of its tender toil, how over and over it forgives the moon that daily exile and returns to turn mountains into sand." As if to say, you too can have this homecoming. You too possess this elemental power of turning the stone in the dust, of turning the stone in the heart into golden dust. Someone once asked Nobel laureate Toni Morrison how we survive whole in the world. She replied, "Sometimes you don't survive whole. You just survive in part. But the grandeur of life is that attempt. It's not about the solution. It is about being as fearless as you can and behaving as beautifully as you can under completely impossible circumstances." Remember what Margaret Mead said, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed individuals can change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has." Love is the means. Go and practice self-care so restorative and so fun that it inspires others to self-care. Shower the people you love with love. Throw open the windows of your soul to the sun and shine gloriously with your love for others and for our complicated world. Wear your heart on your sleeve where it's easy for everyone to name your love. Love is an act of resistance. Blessed be. Amen.